for so many adopted people, getting access to original birth records can be a very empowering experience. It can be more than just a piece of paper. It's a breadcrumb that leads the way to understanding who they are and where they came from. But in Michigan, adoptees often do not have access to their records. There's a group of advocates trying to change that. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. A coalition of Michigan adoptees and lawmakers are advocating to pass a couple of state bills that would create pathways for adult adoptees to access their original birth certificate, as well as other documents. Joining us today are three folks who've been acting on this. They're all members of a joint effort, the Michigan Adoptee Rights Coalition. Valerie Lemieux, the founder of Adoptee Advocates of Michigan. Hi, Valerie.
Hi.
Erica Curry Van E is the president of the Michigan Adoptee Collaborative. Hi, Erica.
Hi.
And Gregory Luce is with us, too. He's an attorney with the Adoptee Rights Law Center and also the executive director of Adoptees United, Inc. Hi, Gregory. Nice to have you.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
There is no one adoption story, and there is no one path, I imagine, into this kind of work. Could we just go around the table and each of you maybe say a thing or two about how and why you got involved in this? Valerie, why don't we start with you?
Well, I'm actually a Michigan adoptee born in Genesee County. I was raised in the Metro Detroit area. I was in a closed adoption, infant adoption, and placed at a couple months old. I only recently got involved in adoptee rights in the last couple of years, but I have been heavily involved in adoptee groups for more than a decade. We started Adoptee Advocates of Michigan because we wanted Michigan adoptees to have the same opportunities and information that adoptees in other states have.
Yeah. Erica, how about you? How did you find your way into this path?
Well, I was adopted in the state of Ohio in 1969. And really, from the time I was 18, I wanted to know my identity. I wanted to know where I came from. And so that started me off on a 27-year journey to get my birth record, my original birth certificate, which then really was the key for me to being able to find out who I was. Through that, I decided to search for my biological family. I reunited with about 25 relatives 9 years ago at age 45, and immediately wanted to be involved in advocacy in Michigan because it was the single most transformative experience of my life.
That's amazing. Greg, I understand that you're not just an attorney with an interest in this. You have a story of your own as well?
I do. I was born and adopted in the District of Columbia in the 1960s. But then later in life, when I had a child, which is pretty typical for many adopted people, you want to know more. And I sought my original birth record in the District of Columbia and then found out it would take me extensive efforts to get it. And I had a 4.5-year court case that went up to the Court of Appeals and back. And I finally, during COVID, held my original birth record. And even though I knew every person on it, I knew who they were. I'd been reunited with my mother. She had told me who my father was. I was not allowed to have that unless I went through the court system like I did. And from there, that developed my work in representing adult adopted people to get what is rightfully theirs.
One of the things that I really appreciate is the fact that it gives us a sense of how adoption laws in one place, you know, can vary an awful lot from other states. And that when we talk about the rules for adoption in Michigan, that there may be folks who are affected by Michigan's adoption rules who are in other completely different places, maybe even other countries in their lives right now, and vice versa. There are folks in Michigan now who are subject to rules in many states. Let's start at the front end of the process. When, as a child is born in Michigan, there's a new birth certificate if there is an adoption that shows the adoptive parents as the child's parents. Valerie, can you maybe say what happens to the original birth certificate?
So children have the original birth certificate until they become adopted. Adoption is what seals that record, and they make an amended birth certificate where they put the adoptive parents' names on it. And so we lose the ability to access our original birth certificate, unfortunately. That is still something that is very important to us because it validates our lived experience, and many adoptees would like to be able to have that the way non-adoptees can.
Erica, can you maybe say a few things about the importance of the original and secondary vital records to adoptees?
Well, I think that for all other citizens, the birth certificate is available. And for adopted people, our birth certificates are sealed at the point of adoption. Now, I do want to say that because policies have changed over time, we have different rules for different people in the state of Michigan and across the country. And that's one of the problematic issues, is that it's just simply the right to be able to access that simple piece of paper that every other citizen can go down to Vital Records and pay $20 and apply for. So it's about the validation of a lived experience, but also it is the truth, the true record of birth, as opposed to a falsified record, which is what the amended is. It's not the true record of birth. And sometimes there's information on that birth certificate. So for example, my original birth certificate said previous live births. There was a sibling born almost 3 years before me that was listed on my birth certificate. And so I would not have known that had I not received my birth certificate and then since have found my sibling.
Greg, some people like Erica are able to reunite with their birth families and do so. But can you speak about broadly what's done with new information when people are able to access their original birth certificate?
It's a great question. Sometimes they do nothing with that information. Receiving it in the first place is a really remarkable moment, you know, having done that myself. And you feel tethered to the earth, but more or less, you also feel that your birth has been acknowledged and the truth of your birth has been acknowledged. And that's incredibly important when you've gone through your life wondering, was I hatched out of an egg? And adoptees actually think this. I felt like during my childhood and even into my adulthood, I was untethered to the earth. And when I found out through reunion, not through the birth record, that I actually had a mom and her name was Pam and she lived in Florida, I immediately felt tethered to the earth. And it's almost an unexplainable emotion. But then the birth record itself was acknowledgement from the state that, yes, you are correct in believing this. It's something that it's very difficult for adopted people to explain, but it's very meaningful.
We need to take a break. More in a minute.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Greg, could you maybe tell us a little bit about what would change under the two House bills that are under consideration right now?
What would change is to focus on a single piece of paper, and that is the original birth record. Right now, Michigan has a very outdated, it goes back to 1980, system that is essentially broken, it's unused, and it all focuses on reuniting people as opposed to obtaining your own birth record. So they have a registry, which many states have. They have registries to facilitate contact between people, and you must go through that registry in order to even get permission to get your birth record. And so the bills take an incredibly complex system and simplifies it and makes it about the original birth record and makes it so that Valerie, if it passes, can go down to Vital Records, fill out a form, pay $15, and in a few weeks she gets her original birth record. And that's it. It's simplifying it to make it equal to all other people and equal to other 15 other states that have already done this.
Right. Valerie, what does equal access mean in this case? Is there necessarily additional hoops to jump through, assuming these bills were to pass as written?
No, that's the beauty of bills, was that we would finally be treated the same way other citizens are treated. where it's not going to be dependent upon what year you were born or which county you live in or which judge you happen to speak with. It's going to be equal for all adopted people in our state. That's really important because this is an equality and a rights issue, and it should be something very important in the state.
I've read that this process can be even more cumbersome for people who were adopted between the years 1945 and 1980. Valerie, could you say a little bit about why that's the case?
So, yes, we have adopted people that are born in that time frame, or actually relinquished in that time frame, that have been trying for decades to get that information. And there's so many roadblocks. It's a very complicated system. And most of the adoptees in Michigan, they're overwhelmed by it, and they're not sure how to get around it. And they end up going the DNA route. There's other routes to get your information, and adoptees have really figured out how to use them through social media. We have a lot of search angels that are willing to do the work for free because they understand the importance of this issue. And so holding these records secret by the state, it's not as effective as the state might think. Unfortunately, that group has had to use those means to get any kind of information. And really, a lot of them only wanted the birth certificate.
Erica, what kind of support does this get between Democrats or Republicans? Is there a particular constituency that's been interested in this?
Well, that's one of the beautiful things about this bill package is that it's bipartisan. So we have a tie bar system here in Michigan, meaning that one bill passes, the other bill passes, they go together. And so we have a Republican and a Democrat both sponsoring different parts of the legislation, one that gives the civil human right to the birth record and the other that detangles the birth record and places it back in vital records like all other citizens in Michigan. So it's bipartisan. It affects everybody. And I think that that's one of the things that we're really grateful to have the opportunity to talk to your audience about, because I think everybody knows somebody who's adopted, and yet most people don't realize what we have to go through, that we have to go through 27 years. I went through the court system and was denied. I was in a system in Ohio similar to what you talked about, that 1940 to 1985, where there was an assumption that everything was closed and sealed for life unless there would be some kind of consent on record by the biological parents. That has since changed, but what we have is basically different laws and different provisions and, quite frankly, discrimination that's playing out in Michigan. And so I think all Republican and Democrats that care about that issue and equality are bought into this, as well as those that want to streamline processes and see our systems and our departments modernized to be policy pacing with current practice.
Erica, I'd like to ask this question of you, but if anybody else has thoughts, I'd like to hear as well. Could you maybe say more about how consent from birth parents has shaped the law? I mean, there was a time when it seems like there was no question of whether you would be able to get access to birth records, because that's what an adoption meant, was that you were giving up parenting rights. And there's been so much evolution on this. Can you talk about the changes you've seen? And indeed, whether the birth parents can necessarily override the interests of the adoptee at this time in the law?
The short answer to that is yes, the parents can override the interest of the adoptee, even when there are major medical issues at play and there is a need for identifying information. There still is a court order required depending on when you're born. One thing that has happened is back when we were all born, the practice was we believed in a blank slate theory that genetics don't matter. If you just love that child, it's enough. We know better now, and so we need to do better now. We need to go back and retroactively fix these laws that are so broken. I think that there was a tremendous amount of shaming for mothers, coercion. You know, it's hard to imagine a time in history when you couldn't be a single mom, but that was the case for so many of these mothers. And we actually believe that the opposition to this bill package is exploiting our biological mothers and representing them, but not really allowing them to speak for themselves, because we've got hundreds of thousands of birth mothers that are saying, I was never promised lifetime anonymity or confidentiality, and quite frankly, have wanted to know what happened to their children. And so these protection laws were really put in place to protect the record from being accessible to the public, but also to protect adoptive families from any interruption from birth parents. Now, adoption is much different. And, you know, maybe we were 95% closed back when we were born. It's 95% open, some level of openness today.
So when we talk about consent, this gets into the issue of what records we're talking about. And I think we always have to be very careful of which records, because there's a vast set of records that are either adoption records or associated in some way with adoption. So you have adoption agency records, you have court records, and those are not part of this bill. These bills are about the original birth record. And when a person relinquishes a child for adoption, there's no guarantee of that adoption. There's no promise there will be an adoption. And in many states, that the adoptive parents can make a decision whether to issue a new amended birth certificate or not. So the record itself is independent of adoption. When we talk about consent for releasing information, and this is true in Michigan, it relates to information to facilitate contact between people. It's not about an original birth record of the person who is the named on it, whose record it is. And so consent by a birth parent to release that birth record is essentially a tool to control adopted people as adults for their access to their own information. And it grew out of the stigma that existed in the 50s and 60s of adoption itself, and also about infertility, but also to protect the adoptive family from being interfered with by the birth parent. And later in the 70s, we started to become adults. They demanded their birth records, and suddenly policymakers said, whoa, 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 we're not going to provide these birth records because this would disrupt families, this would destroy relationships, any number of reasons. And from there, we were essentially never really trusted with our own records.
Is there any evidence that fewer people might be willing to surrender their children for adoption if they know that it is possible that they could be contacted in the future?
And there's no evidence of that. In fact, it would be kind of a joke today if you were to tell a woman you'll never be found when they know, obviously, it's their DNA.
And this thing called the internet.
Right. Internet, social media. There's always been tools that adopted people and birth parents have used in the past. Years ago, it was paying a searcher by cash who would have access to microfiche and have records. And so that was a tool. I mean, you had to be able to afford it, or you hire a private investigator. And then the internet comes along and you have social media. And now we have the most effective and inexpensive tool, and that's DNA. And what happens with DNA, rather than release the birth record to the individual who's named on it, you are incentivized, if you can't get it, to use DNA. And you're matched with a first or second cousin. Often you're matched with an aunt or uncle. And then you have these conversations about a relinquishment that happened in 1972 that is more widely discussed around the family. And instead of a discrete release of a record, the entire family learns about this, if it even was a secret.
That's the Stateside podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes at michiganpublic.org. Today's pod was produced by our podcast editor, Rachel Ishikawa. Other producers on the show are Mike Blank, Ronia Cavansag, Mercedes Mejia, and April Van Buren. Our intern is Olivia Meradian. The show's executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Music for the pod comes from Blue Dot Sessions and from Audio Network. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Rebecca Williams.
I'm Lester Graham. We've been working on a big project about Great Lakes birds called the Bird Connection.
It will look at ducks and trumpeter swans,
egrets and herons,
and piping plovers. Yes!
We'll discuss what we've discovered at a Michigan Public Issues and Ale event.
Including how some problems for birds are problems for people.
It's at Arbor Brewing Company in Ypsilanti, the evening of May 21st at 7.
You can register at michiganpublic.org.